Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
Part of having the perspective is that we do have the solutions, and we know we have the solutions. So it's not like we're trying to find a solution that doesn't exist. We just need to plug into and support the solutions that we know are out there. And that's where we come back around to using our voice, choices, and votes.
Hey, everyone. This is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. That little message of hope comes from Naomi Bartley. Naomi is a therapist in Northfield, Minnesota, and she does a lot of focus on grief counseling. But as you're going to hear today, she also works with people around eco-anxiety. Naomi is a member of the North America Climate Psychology Alliance. We are going to learn a little bit more about them, why they're important, and how they work with eco-anxiety. If you're not familiar with the term, it is the depression, the grief, the anxiety that people are feeling, especially in the Western world, about the uncertainty of the future in the big picture. And also just, how do we do this? How do we handle this? How do we function with this awareness that kind of hangs over us as we go through life and try to do things to help? So Naomi is going to talk to us today about kind of how to manage that and how to be proactive and realistic with doing what we can do. Naomi talks about approaches to conversations when perhaps you and the person you're talking to are not necessarily on the same page about the topic of climate change and environmental sustainability and related topics. Our conversation definitely has climate change at the base of it, but I would also say that the tools that she is giving can be used really for way more than just this topic alone. She also gives a good amount of resources if you are wanting to get involved, where you can do that. And you can also, of course, connect with her, and her information will be both in the notes and towards the end of our conversation. Coming up in Minneapolis on February 27th in the morning, Naomi is going to be one of a panel of speakers speaking about combating climate change at a Common Good breakfast. So check the details out on that, both towards the end as well as in the show notes. And I have a couple more things in the outro that I have from some notes and another conversation that Naomi had with me, and I just don't want them to get lost in the shuffle. So I will share with those with you at the end. Before I bring you into the conversation, I want to thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Please be sure to check out the other episodes at wellnessrenpodcast.com. If you are somebody who listens on iTunes or any other podcast platform, we would so appreciate you giving a quick review or a star rating. That really does help us out. So please, it's something quick and easy. And if you could take the time to do that, that would be fantastic. If you want to support the podcast, of course, you can share it, forward the emails, forward it on Facebook, anyone you think might be interested. Also, please consider being a part of the Patreon podcast community. That is how we pay the bills, basically, the costs of the podcast. And, you know, in reality, one of my least favorite things about the podcast is having to mention this each week and asking you guys to support financially and for your help. And I really sincerely appreciate the folks that have. And I know that not everybody is in a position to. If you are somebody who would like to, you can support at $1 a month. But I'll tell you, a little bit more goes a long way. So thank you so much for all of the people who have stepped up and stepped forward to share with us to support the costs. Unlike NPR, I don't have a staff or a base to start from. So I know that some people have said that they really don't understand how podcasts work, or the podcasts that they listen to are the celebrity podcasts, which are a whole different thing. This is just me and my silent tech guy. So just so you know that, for those of you who are new to the podcast, or again, just not aware of how this whole thing runs, this is my passion. This is my baby. This is what I'm looking to build so that I can keep doing it and keep growing it and keep it getting better and getting you more amazing people to expand the conversation and the information that I'm able to get you each week. So thank you so much for those of you who have provided feedback and asked me questions and let me know that you're listening. I love it. I appreciate it. And I thank you so much for that. I really do. Oh, and it would be probably helpful to tell you how to actually do that. If you go to the wellnessrenpodcast.com site, on the left below the iTunes button and above the Friends of the Podcast banners, you will find a red button that says Become a Patron. And that is where you can sign up to do that. It's a pretty quick and easy process. Thank you so much for checking it out and for considering and for listening. All right, let's head on in with Naomi. I talk in our interview how I found her and got connected with her. And, you know, this whole sort of eco-anxiety thing, I hadn't really heard of it as an actual term until I ran into this presentation that she was on a panel for. And though I didn't have a word for it, definitely hear the results and the conversation and people wondering, where do we go? Like, what is the world going to look like in 10 years? And where should I be? And am I doing the best that I can? And does what I do even matter sometimes? So anyway, hopefully this conversation will help. First, I want to tell people how I found you, because I think this is really cool. Fig and Faro, which is a restaurant in Minneapolis. So I'm in Duluth, but I was in Minneapolis for my birthday. And they had a environmental series. The topic was eco-anxiety, how to chill out on a hot planet. I was like, that sounds so amazing, because this is something I am hearing people kind of stressing out about what are we doing? Are we going to be here in 100 years? And does anything I do make a difference? Or gosh, am I, by using this napkin instead of something reusable, am I destroying the planet? What responsibility do I have? And we're all kind of overloaded. And I think it's one more piece that can really overload us when we are people who really want to do the right thing. So I am so excited to have you, Naomi. Please introduce yourself and tell us what you do and how this environmental focus came into focus for you.
Okay. Well, thank you, Judy. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I am a grief and trauma therapist in private practice in Northfield, Minnesota. I would say I'm first and foremost a mom of a 7-year-old boy.
Oh.
Yeah. And my interest in the environment has always been kind of part of my life. After having my son, it became even more apparent to me that the environment and climate change warranted more attention. And for me to have integrity in terms of being a mom and living by my values and other political dynamics that have been occurring in recent years prompted me to become more engaged with climate activism. And in trying to figure out how I could bridge my area of expertise and my skills as a therapist and an educator specializing in grief and trauma, I saw a clear bridge to what I saw happening sociologically with fear and anxiety paralysis around the changes we're seeing in the climate.
For individuals?
Yep, for individuals. And for myself as well. And I think also some of the broader cultural responses or lack of responses to me pointed to more psychological dynamics. Than necessarily just sociological or bioscientific.
Let's start with your definition of eco-anxiety.
Well, generally, the way you set out to describe eco-anxiety is consistent with how we understand it. I guess I would want to qualify a little bit to say that it can incorporate a kind of a range of experiences from severe anxiety, chronic or acute, And it can affect our sense of well-being and can lead to feelings of despair and can kind of blend into our experiences of grief around the changes in the environment. I would also add that generally when we define eco anxiety, we think about it in terms of human beings' relationship with the environment. And so it is couched in that relational dynamic and that there is anxiety around that.
Okay. And explain that just a little bit more, maybe, in what that means in the relation to the climate, in just kind of how they have to function and live in in the climate in the future.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think that overlaps nicely with the work I'm doing as a member of the Climate Psychology Alliance of North America. Essentially, we view that there are psychological shifts happening in our relationship with our ecosystem. What that requires is that we look more specifically at how we are in partnership with ecology rather than dominating it. And also being more interactive rather than more passive, moving from avoidance to connection with our relationship with the ecosystem. And, you know, if we think about our relationships with people and how what our attachment systems are with people, you know, some people have avoidant styles in terms of dealing with conflict or concerns that we really need to look at, honestly, our relationship with a living organism that is our ecology on this planet. And so in that, we have to accept that we have a physical and psychological dependence on the planet. And that given this dependence, there's vulnerability. And with that vulnerability comes some anxiety. So part of the Climate Psychology Alliance objective is to help people, help clinicians, psychologists, and then of course the general public to face these shifts that we're experiencing within ourselves, within the populations that we serve, and then the broader community. And so eco-anxiety is one term. We talk about eco-grief. We talk about solastalgia, which is the feeling we have when we're displaced from our home and what that feels like, feeling longing for a home that we've lost that won't ever return. And then eco-paralysis, right? How we kind of get immobilized by the overwhelming nature of the issues that are facing us.
Right. It's an interesting shift that we have had. Like you said, it's that difference between going from sort of being dominant over our earth and our environment to realizing we are coexisting here, all of us together.
Yeah. And if we're willing to recognize that nature bats last, we better start cooperating. Right. So in many ways, it's like, how can we be our best selves in our best possible relationship with this planet that's our home? You know, and so the things that create anxiety in our intimate relationships probably translate to the kinds of anxieties we feel relative to the vulnerability of the planet.
That's what I hear echoed in conversations, you know, people going, what is the world? Not only what is the world going to look like, you know, especially younger people towards the end of my lifetime, but where do I live? What do I do? How do I do the best things to support the earth and myself for my entire lifetime?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, those are real questions that people are asking. And when you hear the data and you hear the, well, this could be happening by this year. Oh, wait, maybe it's going to happen sooner. And you see the water levels rising and you see areas where, you know, they don't exist anymore. It starts to get really real.
Yeah. And it's happening now. Real time. One of the things I did want to talk about briefly is you mentioned in your earlier intro something about that we're especially becoming aware of this in the Western world. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure we kind of drill down on what we mean by that, because
okay.
Of course the whole world is experiencing the effects of climate change, and particularly there's some more vulnerable nations around the world who aren't Western nations, who bear the brunt of the climate change experience that the planet is having.
So let me, and I want you to continue, but let me say, and you're right, I didn't explain that well enough, because here's where that came from, was that the eco-anxiety is happening here. This is the way I understood all of the stuff that I read put together. Yeah. Eco-anxiety is something we experience here in the Western world a little bit more, but there's many, many places who are dealing with the actual results of what's going on. So we have the anxiety, they have the actual living it experience.
Yeah, yeah. So there, many people around the world are in the crisis, right? And living the actual fear and terror and challenges of being in the crisis, adapting to the crisis, and then trying to mitigate for that. And many of us in the Western world are sheltered from some of those extremes, which is quickly changing, and probably, you know, alluding to what your qualification was about the Western world, that it's coming, right? Mm-hmm. So we have this anticipatory anxiety about something that's coming that we can't control for.
There are people who are very aware they are dealing with the anxiety of watching other people in other parts of the world that we really don't have to think about.
Yeah.
Because of the way our world is structured, they're dealing with that reality, and they're seeing them dealing with that reality. And so it's kind of like, hey, reality is here, people.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Right. That's right.
I know that this is a difficult topic, right? Like, I mean, the basic questions I think that come into play with when you do one thing on an environmental level, what are you costing on another environment level, right? Like, you know, we make a choice to do the right thing here, but then it really costs us a lot of water, or it costs us a lot of something over someplace else. And so I think there is sometimes that piece that people just feel like, ah, you know, I don't know what do we start with, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then into our own lives. So what does that look like for helping, you know, helping people? Because I mean, so you're doing a focus on this. Does this mean this is part of what you've integrated into your practice with conversations? Or is this sometimes a very particular focus? This is somebody's really, it's a huge stress, source of stress for them.
I guess where I want to start with that question is with my work in educating the community. In my work as a climate reality leader, I'm a volunteer with the Climate Reality Project and have also served as a mentor in the leadership training in that organization. And through that organization, I've been equipped with a lot of information, scientific information, but also tools and tactics for informing and encouraging people to get involved and to learn about ways that they can affect change. So I guess I'd start with that piece, you know, doing education. If and when I distill that down to more of an individual process where people get paralyzed and, you know, either go stay in denial or just feel like, what's the point in doing anything? Because I can't do anything. I'm helpless. Mm-hmm. That's where we get more into the individual psychology of a person's sense of integrity, who they are as a person, what they value, how they may respond to adversity, and what adversity means to them. So there's a little more general psychology there around what we do when we're stressed or traumatized or anxious. And I would say on the individual level that telling our own stories, sharing, you know, I don't tell my story in therapy, but I do often when I'm out engaged in the community, sharing our own stories about how we're relating to climate change and how it's shaping who we are and how we be in our lives. So I would encourage people to reflect on those kinds of questions. You know, what are your values, and prioritizing values and then living out those values on a daily basis. If we're not living out our values, we're going to feel fragmented and not very grounded. And then we're going to feel more overwhelmed by any kind of adversity. And climate change is a very big one. The other piece I find to be a very pervasive issue is the sense of isolation people have relative to this particular crisis.
And what do you mean by that? What does that look like?
Well, it looks a lot like the sense of helplessness, or I have to do this all by myself. Mm-hmm. You know? So we get into kind of a savior complex, like I'm supposed to have the silver bullet here to know how to, you know, change everything so that it's all better.
Right.
And I don't think people consciously think that, but there's this overwhelming sense of I'm carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders and I can't possibly do this. Mm-hmm. So to get out of isolation means to get some perspective about who I am in the grand scheme of things. And so there's some humility involved. Paradoxically, it seems like, well, we're already feeling pretty humble. This is pretty humbling. But the flip side is the humility is recognizing, oh, I actually do need other people. Mm-hmm. I actually need to be in relationship. I need to be in community in order to find my own strength, but also then in order to really actually be able to do anything. I can change my light bulbs at home and I can feel good about that for a nanosecond. Mm-hmm. But then I'm thinking, well, what about the neighbors down the street? Or what about our city? And what about, you know, the use of fossil fuels around the globe? I can't do that just by changing my light bulb.
Right.
Well, and so then the challenge is finding your voice, right? And if you don't know who you are and what you're about, it's going to be really hard to recognize your own voice. And if it's hard to recognize your own voice, it's going to be really hard to find it. I'm hearing something. I don't know if that's my voice. So I, you know, what am I doing here? Mm-hmm. So the good news is that if somebody's anxious about what's going on, that signals that they care about what's going on, that they have they already have a sense of urgency, that something needs to change. And typically what stops us from moving that anxiety into constructive action is we get overstimulated, we get overwhelmed, like, and then we get immobilized. So mm-hmm. we get out of what in trauma therapy we call our window of tolerance for stress.
Okay.
So if we bump out of that window of tolerance, we either get immobilized or get fragmented or just we're not able to function very well. So we have to keep ourselves within that window of tolerance. In the resilience field of thought, we might call it our window of resilience, you know, where we're able to function well, mm-hmm. And still tolerate stress and be responsive and problem solve and engage. How we do that is, first of all, to regulate our nervous system. We know that biologically we're built to shift into fight or flight mode when we're freaking out.
Right. That is a thing, even though there's no tiger behind us, we're still there. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And in many ways it's great. I mean, our biology is absolutely amazing that our frontal lobe can be overridden by our reptilian brain. Now, that doesn't sound so great. But when we really need it, it's really good that we can like pick between black or white, that we have to decide. We can't just, you know, wallow in the gray. There are times when we really have to choose mm-hmm. this or that. But to be in that position most of the time is very stressful, and your body's producing a lot of cortisol, and the stress hormones are affecting our health, our mental health, our physiological health, which then makes it very hard for us to make good decisions and see how our future, how our actions can affect our future, because we're not operating from that frontal sphere. Am I making sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So the first thing really is to calm our little creature bodies down. And we can do that any number of ways: exercising, deep breathing, meditating, listening to calming music, taking care of our bodies, being with a calming other, going out in nature. There are all kinds of ways that we can do that. We also know that one thing that can complicate our ability to stay in that resilience zone is being around toxic people. The field of interpersonal neurobiology really is about how our bonds and relationship affect the health of our brain. And we know that in nurturing healthy, loving relationships and dynamics, our brains grow and thrive, and we have a sense of integration about who we are. In toxic relationships, we also know our brain can kind of atrophy. So there really is something to that, to avoiding toxic relationships or avoiding toxic people or dynamics. And I generally don't call people like toxic or bad. It's just kind of a shorthand way of saying, you know, some people do kind of sit in a negative space and they need a lot of hugs. But if you're depleted on your hugs, it's kind of hard to give hugs, you know?
So,
you know, getting back to our earlier conversation, being around people that respect you, reflect who you are, they may not be exactly like who you are, but they mirror back the value of who you are. That's when things began to kind of sprout and flourish organically. You know, that something really good can grow out of that. And that's powerful. Mm-hmm. So if you have those kinds of relationships, and I tell you, they are out there. When you plug into some of these environmental organizations, and I have found this to be true with the Climate Reality Project, that there is a sense of interconnectedness and resonance, even across thousands of miles, knowing that we're all out there. And we're out there together doing this hard work, and we're out there together doing this hard work because of our values. And we don't have time to be petty and be pulling each other down. I mean, that's, you know.
There's too much to do.
Right? The earth is burning. Come on. I should also say with affection that when people tend to be negative or toxic, that is a way of coping. It's not terribly adaptive. But to think about that compassionately, that there's some suffering underneath that toxicity, even if they're not aware of it. But that doesn't mean it's your job necessarily to absorb that. Mm-hmm. Right? So, I don't know. Where am I? Where are we? is this helpful?
This conversation is helpful for any time we're in stress. Or trying to figure out what our next move is, or how do we be more effective in our life. So I think there's definitely value in that. I guess one of the questions that I would have too is, you know, definitely self-care is huge. And like you said, getting in the community that have the same values and doing something that you can. And of course, so here's where my mind goes with that a little bit, is not only what can people do, you know, because part of that is feeling like you are being effective on some level and doing something effective. And then I know for some people, there's a fear, they want to be involved, say, in helping with climate change or figuring out sustainability. And then they're also afraid because everybody's so overtaxed with life and schedules that they're like, am I going to get into something then that I cannot put my best foot forward, or that I'm not then effective there either, but I know they need help. And you know what I mean? We're trying to find all of that balance and do well and not over put things on our plate, but at the same time, really wanting to be positively effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there is a learning curve, right? I don't know about you and the we that you're referring to necessarily. I know for myself, I was not educated to be an activist. So it's been a steep learning curve for me since I was trained in 2017 by the Climate Reality Project and Al Gore in Seattle to kind of figure out how I can best use myself as an instrument. And it wasn't right out of the gate that I knew what that was.
Uh-huh.
And I'm still learning, you know, oh, I can really plug in here in my own community, and there seems to be some traction there. So I'm going to stick with that. I think that, again, this is kind of where the humility piece comes in, is, yeah, there is a need, and I want to figure out how I can meet the needs that I can meet, but I also need to grieve what I can't do. And I think there's some responsibility that we need to take individually for accepting our limitations, because until we do that, we're not going to be effective. Because we're going to think we're going to try to do more, or maybe not just more, but just do something other than what we are good at doing. And so if we responsibly, you know, grieve what we're not able to do, like, you know, run for office, I would never be able to do that given my life choices and who I am as a person. Mm-hmm. So I let that go. And then I look at what I think I may be able to do. So I, you know, I think there is some responsibility. I do think that in our, one of the benefits of being in such a technologically advanced society is that we have so many resources at hand. But I also think we get a false sense of invulnerability and a false sense of, you know, that we should be able to do things that are hard without struggling much.
Right.
So this is where we get back to the adversity. How do we relate to adversity? Well, you know what? Sometimes we're going to feel anxiety, right? We're going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be hard. And I'm bummed that I can't do some things that I wish I could do, but am I going to let that stop me from doing the things I can do? You know, so there's a little bit of tough love there. It's like, okay, get over yourself.
Right.
And I say that affectionately because I've been in the God complex too, where, you know, I am overwhelmed by it. And somehow I think it's my responsibility to save the whole world. So getting back to my responsibility is to be a good human being and to care about who is in my immediate environment and care about my community and care about the globe and do that by living with integrity. So I'm coming back around to something I think I've already said. I get the impression, and I've had this with some newly trained activists and new leaders, that, you know, I don't know what to do, or, you know, kind of almost like, tell me what to do. And I think in some ways that's good to be in a receptive position. Like, okay, what are the organizations doing? How can I plug into that? And what's going to help this organization? So some really concrete things that can be done is find out what's going on with your city. Does your city have a climate action plan, or is there one on the table? And if there isn't, why isn't there? And what do you want to do about it? Are there small things that you can do? Can you be joining initiatives through various organizations like the Climate Reality Project or Citizens Climate Lobby or 100% Minnesota or Climate Generation, and, you know, plug into what they're already doing and just support that effort by writing letters or making phone calls or just saying, hey, I'm behind you and I'll show up to your events. All of those relational efforts matter. It's kind of like you're putting your good energy into this huge movement, and that helps the movement happen.
Both on a community level and a personal level. You know, I, like, for instance, we in Duluth just had an ordinance change so that there's going to be a charge for plastic bags now. And, you know, talking to a few people about it, you know, some people think it's a wonderful thing. No, it's not going to save the world, but it's going to create awareness, and it's going to be that little hump, you know. And I was having a conversation with somebody else who was going, you know, is that the thing we should be focusing on? And if they're not charging for paper bags, does that mean that we're using more paper bags? And is that an industry that's using a bunch of water? And is that, you know what I mean? So it's again, that analysis paralysis that you're talking about of how do we focus and where do we, you know, how do we figure out how to put our energies without having a science degree, right? I mean, I think that's sometimes the thing too. So I guess my, you know, one of the thoughts I'm having as you're talking is, you know, not overtaxing yourself, being gentle with yourself, but being understanding of what can you do, what do you want to do, and what makes sense to you, or what are your values, and doing the best we can with the information that we have. So, you know, in those times of questioning, like, you know, with this, the ordinance of some people are, it's great. Some people have concerns, and then that's going to happen with anything. So that makes sense. But then getting down to the level, you know, not only just what we do in our community, but what, you know, what about the level in our house or the people that are around us? Like, is, do we take what you're saying kind of from that bigger picture of community and attribute that to our own home. I mean, I know I haven't heard this just lately, but I've known people who have had roommates, have roommate situations. And there's one roommate who is really focused on making the house as eco and sustainable as possible. And they're not quite on board as much as that person. And they're feeling shamed every time they use something. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think some of my questions are too around that. How do we deal with that or come to a peace in that, or, you know, kind of live together? But then at the same time, you want the whole people who are, you know, kind of either sticking their head in the sand just because they don't know, or it's just overwhelming, and helping them get on board with some of the good things. So I feel like I've kind of asked a big question there.
Well, it's a beautiful question. I mean, it's really kind of at the heart of things, isn't it? That here we are in relationships. Some of us are approaching it one way. Some of us are approaching it another way. And our world is hanging in the balance.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know, so the shame, it's interesting you bring up the shame thing, because if people feel ashamed, then there's something about them that they don't feel good about. Mm-hmm. Right? So let's say I feel ashamed because I used a straw, a plastic straw, and my son is like, "Mama, you shouldn't be using a plastic straw. You told me that." And I feel shame, like I'm a bad person. Mm-hmm. That's on me. Why do I feel like a bad person? I need to look at that. You know, he didn't tell me I was a bad person. He just confronted me using a straw. Mm-hmm. He didn't say, "Mama, you're a terrible person." What are you doing, Mama? This doesn't make sense. He said. So shame is an opportunity to self-reflect, I think. So there's that piece. The what's the lingo? Not shame culture. The cancel culture.
Oh.
The, you know, calling people out and putting them down, saying on social media, you know, calling them out and embarrassing them, shaming them for their hypocrisy about either environmental choices or their social justice choices. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's useful. But I do think that if we're living in a setting and somebody's living one way and somehow that confronts our own value system, I don't think that's a bad thing. But I think it warrants having conversation. You know, so if, let's say, my son didn't say anything, but all the while he's, you know, stewing about, "Weird mama, why is she using straws?" I would rather have him say, "Hey, you know what? I don't understand why you're doing this." And so I would ask you, Judy, you know, are there things in your life where you look at yourself and say, "Why am I still using plastic cup lids?" Or, you know, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, so I would ask you, are there little things in your life you could change? And you're just kind of like, "Why am I not?"
Well, yeah, no. And I do have some of those. And there are some that I have thought about and then reasoned. And this is where I still kind of feel like, well, I'm not doing enough, that I've reasoned, you know what, I'm going to do that this uh-huh. way. And here's why. Uh-huh. For instance, and some of it comes down to, like, I've thought about if I never used a paper towel again and I always composted, and I live in a small apartment with a tiny kitchen, I'm like, okay, where would this go? Pretty soon I don't have space for me to live. No. And I feel bad. Like, I do kind of feel bad about, well, this is for my planet. Should I not give up some of my comfort for my planet? And in some ways, I don't wash my dishes when it's convenient. Sometimes I'm very thoughtful about that, because in my apartment, I have to use so much water to get hot water. Mm-hmm. And I'm a fan of washing my dishes with hot water. Yeah. So I either try to do them right after I take a shower, if possible, because then the hot water is convenient, or I don't do them every day, because then I can just do a whole bunch of them at one time and spend that water thoughtfully. So, I mean, there are things that I do, and I know that I could definitely do more, but there are things that I'm kind of like, well, you know what? I am going to use paper towels, because for me to get to a laundromat to take care of all of the rags that I would use, mm-hmm. I'm already challenged with that. So, but at the same time, being mindful of how much, what I do use.
Yeah. 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 And so we get back to, you know, that all or nothing. When we're freaked out, we're like, I'm supposed to be perfect already. I'm supposed yes. to have this all figured out already. Rather than saying, okay, I'm in process. I'm I'm doing what I can and I just keep working at it. And I think that's the best any of us can do in life in general. And when we're facing really difficult problems that we can't solve by ourselves, where we are reliant on being in community and reliant on others to do this together, mm-hmm. there's got to be grace. There has got to be compassion, understanding, because if we keep bombarding ourselves with criticism, we are going to stay in that black and white, all or nothing thinking, and we're going to be on the defensive all the time, and we're going to be popping out of our window of resilience, mm-hmm. and we're not going to be functioning well. And then we're, you know, one step forward, two steps back. So it's, you know, it's kind of slow and steady wins the race.
Right.
You know, that, and that's not very sexy. It's not very like, wow, I'm going to win a Nobel Prize because I solved this. But it is more truth than not that, you know, we take these steps and progress seems slow. And then all of a sudden, something incredible has happened because of the slow, steady effort that's been made.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it feels more like doable. It feels more right. welcoming. It feels more, and I know, you know, too, when people get on quote unquote the bandwagon, I remember my sixth grade trip to Long Lake Conservation Camp. Mm-hmm. You know, where you yeah. come home and you shut off every light for 3 weeks because how dare you leave a light on in the house?
Good for you.
And those things, and it's interesting because obviously it was many, many years ago that I was at conservation camp, but I can still, it still probably guides me a little bit, you know, as I think of things. So those efforts are, I don't think ever wasted. And I have to say, they did it beautifully. Because they did the, you know, it wasn't pounding on you to make sure you do this. They had this just amazing demonstration that I don't recall what it was with popcorn. And it was so effective as a sixth grader. Like we all were like light bulb moments.
Great. That's great. Well, that's a great story. I mean, you know, that's part of your environmental activism, climate change story, you know, and that's lovely. I think that the radical is also important in the mix, you know. It's just when we get trapped in thinking it's just me and I've got to completely revolutionize my life right now, otherwise I'm a failure and everything's going to go to hell. Mm-hmm. You know, that's catastrophic thinking and just frankly not helpful.
Right.
So you could tell yourself, I am being very helpful and useful in this in the big picture by staying present, being realistic, putting one foot in front of the other, living with integrity, living according to my values, and I keep going.
And I think your point, I think it's an interesting thing when we're maybe stressed or not feeling so great about something or feeling like we're living in some sort of dissonance, mm-hmm. is to going back to the core values and thinking about where the dissonance lies and why is that happening? And then not necessarily rationalize, because I questioned that about myself. Am I rationalizing that I'm not doing this, or is this a good reason? And mm-hmm. can they both mm-hmm. be true? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But looking at that and like, yeah, and being realistic, but looking at the core values and going, okay, where am I and what can I do? What am I doing right now? Or am I living in dissonance because I'm questioning why that's happening? Is it because of something you're feeling from outside yourself? And how can you work with that? But looking at those core values and understanding why you're doing what you're doing, or how can you make that shift to bring it into to bring yourself out of dissonance in a good way?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I think that we have moments where we feel at peace and resolved. And I think that there are realistic perspectives that would say we should feel dissonant because things right now are a little out of balance. Mm-hmm. And it's uncomfortable. It's really uncomfortable. So how do we live with the discomfort is another way to talk about it.
Right. Well, that is a great question because you're absolutely right. There's mm-hmm. there is discomfort sitting around us that we cannot and should not ignore,
right.
and shouldn't get too comfortable with, because in my mind, we shouldn't get too comfortable with it because because it is just a reality. And, you know, and I don't have kids. So I'm glad I don't have that on my own brain about worried about my own children and their children.
Yeah.
At the same time, I have friends who have kids and I want them to have happy existences. So it's that drive forward of, you know, this is not just about me. This is about all of us. And obviously we don't know exactly what the ramifications of things are. So why not try to work better and do the best we can? But like you say, to be aware, and how do we find that sort of okayness with the discomfort?
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, we've got this premium on okayness and happiness, and we shouldn't feel uncomfortable. You know, there's like this idea, okayness, I'm gonna use the word acceptance. I don't know what you mean, but you know, I mean, obviously we're having this conversation that what's happening on a planetary level is not okay.
Yes.
So I shouldn't be okay with it.
Right. Yes.
I can accept the reality. And then with that acceptance, now what does that mean for me in my life? Mm-hmm. And am I okay with how I am responding to this reality? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is no, okay, well, why not? I mean, what's going on in me that I'm not okay with how I'm responding to this? And is it any of those things we've already talked about? Am I overwhelmed? Am I not being true to myself? I mean, what's my inner conflict around this? And then it's my responsibility to seek ways to resolve that. And my personal belief is the best way to do that is to engage with others, to engage our stories, to be informed and to be involved, and to use the voice that we have. Mm-hmm. And then along the way, you're going to enhance your voice because you're going to meet all these amazing people who are also using their voice, and you're going to share tools and ideas, and you're going to affect policy change and vote the right people into office together.
And not feel so alone. I mean, it is that when you're trying to do the best thing for yourself, knowing that you're not alone and trying to do the best thing for yourself.
Yeah. 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 And I also need, some of this has been kind of mildly confrontational about, you know, discomfort and dissonance and tough love and taking responsibility. But I also want to emphasize that doesn't mean we stop enjoying our lives, you know, that we actually have a responsibility to seek out joy, to fully live our lives. We have this gift of our life. You know, and if we're not celebrating our life and celebrating our relationships and celebrating what we each individually can do, what our own creative gifts are, what's the point? You know, so that's also part of taking responsibility, is living as fully as you can, as authentically as you can, caring for yourself and caring for others. Humor's really important. I've laughed a few times today, and I don't know if it's actually been funny.
Right.
Having a sense of humor is actually a really important coping skill. Mm-hmm. And it's good for your physiology. It's good for getting those feel-good hormones going. And so it doesn't have to be all dreary, you know, that when we discover our strength by how we struggle with adversity, we can actually feel good. Like, look at what I'm doing.
Right.
Amazing. I'm taking on this really big thing. I feel good about the relationships I'm in. And let's go for it. And let's see what happens. Isn't this exciting?
Well, and it's interesting as I'm listening to you, and I appreciate your distinctions in the words of okay and acceptance. And it's kind of like, as I'm listening to this, it reminds me of hearing parents who have lost a child talk about, mm-hmm. it's that grief that you feel that you never get to normal. You get to a new normal and you function in that space. And you have, like you say, you live life, you find joy. Because I think that is, I think that's important too. As you were saying, the whole, you know, laughing at things that aren't necessarily funny. That's one of the things that, as I edit my podcasts, I notice that I do. My coping mechanism a lot is laughter. Uh-huh. And it's not that I'm laughing at the negative thing. Sometimes I can see the humor in that too. But it is that sense of humor, that sense of sort of stress relief that kind of comes from that, or being able to seek. Life and humans are complex. There is a really tragic side and there is a funny side as well, or an ironic side that leads to humor in our brain somewhere. And that is helpful too. And that's where I think coming together with groups can be really helpful, because you can sort of laugh at things that are not funny, but everybody understands you. So you're not feeling like you're portraying the wrong message necessarily.
Yeah. I was just thinking that same thing, that talking with you brings forth the laughter, you know, for me and for you. And there's an intimacy in laughter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a whole nother way of connecting that is very close and affirming.
Right.
And so I think there is something powerful. You know, laughter can mean a lot of things, right? It's another way of communicating, like, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. We're having this conversation, and yet we are.
Right.
Kind of the absurdity of life, and here we are.
Well, it's that recognition and that laughter of recognition of understanding.
Yeah. You
know, which I think we see so much more now with our political climate and the political joking. And it's, you know, you can have an audience full of people who are laughing at the absurdity of a situation, and they're not finding the situation at all funny, but they are all finding the you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's an interesting thing. And we are complex. It's very fascinating.
We are complex. As I am very fond of saying to my clients, including myself, we're a trip. You know? I mean, and none of us is exempt, you know?
Right.
I mean, if you scan yourself various times during the day, you got to laugh and go, what a trip.
Yes. Oh, I admire the people who can laugh at themselves, and I'm getting better at it.
Well, yeah, it does require cultivating some curiosity, you know, and kind of taking your ego out of it.
Right.
Where you're looking at, you know, I'm a human being with this whole human family. And I bet I'm not the only one who's felt this way or done this really weird thing. And even if I am, it's because I'm a human being. And what a trip. What? And then it's like, okay, what do I need to do about that? So, yeah, it's another way of having affection for yourself, you know, and some grace. It's like, yeah, we're a trip. And, you know, that's okay. We just got to keep moving on and keep moving on. But anyway, you know what I mean?
Well, and it creates that recognition of what you've done, you know, or whatever that thing has. You can laugh about it, which allows you to process it more differently and more gently, and be able to think about it rather than resist it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That reminds me of something I think is actually critically important when we're telling each other stories or we're wanting to influence some awareness around climate change and climate action. Is we know that neurobiologically, we learn better when we're having good feelings. So if we're feeling ashamed, we're not going to be learning as well. If we're laughing, or if we're feeling some kind of connection and warmth, we're more apt to be receptive to the information and to learn. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's also part and parcel of this idea of being in relationship, trying to avoid toxic dynamics, and recognizing that we can only do this together, and kind of starting from that place rather than I'm an island on my own. I've got to figure out the solution before I can go out and tell people or show my knowledge or ability as an activist.
Right. Yeah. That we have to be perfect before we can speak to help other people understand.
Yeah. Right.
So that brings me to the question of, for those of us, and we're recording this before the massive holiday season, it probably won't go out until after, but in just any situation where we are either talking to people or in a group of people where this is something that they just don't want to recognize as a thing, what do we do on a, you know, sometimes we can't just separate ourselves from those people, relationship situations. Is what can we do to help ourselves, but also is there anything that we can do that is productive? And your point of educate with humor and not shame is probably a big one. what can we do to feel, do they walk away from that conversation and let it go? Or what can they do to feel productive and not drive a wedge?
So I'm imagining you're talking about maybe a holiday gathering with family.
And exactly. Right.
A conversation about it. And some people just don't want to hear it. And some people really want people to hear it.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Well, and so we start with the premise of listening, you know, and inviting the other to kind of share their perspective and their experience. So, you know, let's say you've got a cousin or an uncle or a friend who is either in denial or just gets agitated and doesn't want to talk about it. And you could start by sharing, you know, I've been really thinking about this particular issue, like the winters are getting wetter and how that's affected some of the farmers and affected schools. And what do you think about that? And just leave lots of room for response. And there might be a shutdown. It might just be, I don't want to talk about it or I don't want to think about it. Okay, well, it's something, you know, that's important to me. And I want to share that with you. Or, you know, I wanted you to know this matters to me. And, you know, and just kind of have a light touch about it, right? Mm-hmm. You've planted a seed. More often than not, I think people will share something. You know, that if you can encourage someone to share their story around their experience with climate change, whatever that is, if they're a denier, if they don't like it, if they feel threatened, that gets the ball rolling. I don't think a heavy hammer is effective. And I think you recognize that. And I don't think being crafty is necessarily the way to do it. Like, oh, look at this newsreel that I'm putting on repeat. Sit her on the TV. I mean, if you have a sense of humor and you can spot off the particular community system, go for it. I'd love to hear how that goes. But or you want to get, maybe it's around the dinner table and you just throw it out there to the larger group. You know, like, I've been thinking about this. Like, should I use wrapping paper this Christmas or not? And I know that's kind of random, but I was thinking about it. What do you guys think? And that's true. I actually have been thinking about it. And I've got a 7-year-old who loves ripping open.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, could I do that to him? How about newspapers?
Right.
You know, so those practical everyday kinds of mundane things that impact our climate, you could start there. You know, I don't want to use my hot water. You know, what do you think about that? Mm-hmm. You start with the practical. Other times, you know, you may know you have a friend or family member who has a particular interest. You know, maybe they like hunting or maybe they like eating beef or something like that. You could, you know, kind of ask about, you know, how they think the weather is affecting the hunting season and the deer population. And what does that mean to them?
Right.
And just let them talk, you know, and you may have opportunities then to talk about, yeah, well, the climate in Minnesota is getting warmer and wetter. We know that. And we can see that in measurements. And I know a lot of farmers have struggled with not being able to plant earlier, and that's affected their yields, and that's really been hard. I think it's hard for people to argue that. And so oftentimes we go to the economy. The people who are in denial or at least refuse to acknowledge the reality are concerned about how that's going to affect the economy and affect their income.
Right.
And investments. And so we know renewable energy is one of the largest growing job providers, and that the technology is becoming more and more affordable. And actually investment in clean energy is outstripping investment in fossil fuels. So there's some little facts you can kind of sprinkle into the conversation. That's where being informed can be really helpful when you're trying to leverage some shifts in thinking.
Right.
You know, where you can use a light hand without having to get up on the soapbox and say, the world is burning and it's your fault and you got to stop driving your Cadillac. Even though, you know, I mean, it's, I think that's what people hear, right? Mm-hmm. The people who put up resistances here, you have to change your lifestyle. You've done something wrong. You're thinking wrong. And I'm going to take something away from you because of what you did to the planet. And that's the only way the planet's going to be saved.
Right. You know,
people start getting protective of what's theirs. And it goes from we to me rather than me to we, right? Mm-hmm. Where I've got to protect myself and my interests.
I know some people, you know, have even, because they want to do their thing, they want to affect change, but they sometimes don't even want to talk about what they're doing because they don't want other people to feel pressured to do that, you know? Uh-huh. But uh-huh. I love hearing about that. I know people who have really focused on stopping flying. They don't want to do that because they don't want to be, and they know that their seat on the plane, if it's empty, it's empty. And still plane is still going, but it's still that thing that they can do. Or people who have chosen not to go on cruises and things like that. Yeah. And it's like, I am interested in hearing that because I'm interested in their story and their perspective and what they have learned. And so it's a fascinating thing. So I want people to talk about their thoughts, whether I agree with them or not, because I want to understand them.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting that people don't want to share what they're doing because they don't want somebody else to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we stop taking responsibility for ourselves, and then we're trying to take responsibility for someone else's emotional reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You right. know, and I guess that's kind of, I don't think that's particularly respectful of other individuals. And I don't mean that they're trying to be disrespectful. It's like the opposite of what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. But I think that's been part of the problem is this infantilizing that we can't handle tough stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to tiptoe around each other rather than just speaking our truth and, you know, helping, being in community together, metabolizing that together. Mm-hmm. You know, are you protecting that person or are you protecting yourself from their emotional reaction?
Right. Or, you know? Or both, but yeah.
Yeah, right. Both, you know.
It's very Minnesotan in some ways. I mean, I don't totally know what goes on in other parts of the country, but from things that I hear and things that I listen to.
I'm an expert at this. So it's like, what is your motive here? Is your motive... Why are you not sharing your experience? Is that person going to shoot you? Are they going to hurt you? Or do you just not want to deal with their emotional reaction? And why don't I want to deal with their emotional reaction? What's wrong with them being uncomfortable and saying, I disagree, I don't like what you're saying, or how could you do that? Conflict is really important for a generative society. And I don't mean, you know, we got to define what we mean by conflict. But disagreeing, wrestling with those uncomfortable feelings, saying, I hear you, I'm willing to hear you, I can handle hearing you, that's going to help me understand you better. And maybe then you'll be more open to understanding me better.
Right. Yeah. We all could use some conflict training in.
Well, yeah. I mean,
you know, as a human, it's difficult, it's hard to do. And it's so often we're taught to avoid it rather than figure out how to have it well.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to that. What is my window of tolerance for the stress here? Can it be a generative experience? You know, can something creative come out of this disagreement? When I'm feeling calm and I trust myself to take care of my body and I'm not in my fight or flight mode and I know that I'm going to be okay, I can welcome those conflicts because I trust myself to be okay. And I mean, okay, like I'm going to live through this. I'm going to take care of myself. And that's that person's experience. And I have my experience.
Right.
But if I'm stressed and I'm not coping well, and I'm just kind of on the edges of my window of tolerance, and I'm agitated and hungry, and I haven't slept, and I'm worried about all my work projects, I'm probably not in a position to engage in some kind of conflict, engage in a disagreement.
Which I think is also, I mean, it's a self-awareness that people have, but I appreciate you saying that because I think it sometimes allows us to go, okay, not the time.
Yeah.
Not the time, not the place. That's right. Let's do this another time and still being able to find a way to welcome the conflict instead of just avoid it altogether.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And that's where knowing yourself is really important. knowing that, oh, wow, my energy reserves are really pretty low right now. I'm not going to be a good instrument in this conversation.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think that's great advice and great awareness because it's hard. I mean, it's not my skill set. It's when I'm working hard to do better. And some of the work that I do luckily helps me learn that, but it isn't, you know, how many people don't I hear going, well, I don't like conflict, so I won't do sometimes very simple things that it's like, yeah. Oh my gosh, that doesn't even have to be. I mean, if it's a conflict, it just shouldn't have to be a conflict. It should just be a simple question and answer. And it's, you know what I mean? And I understand it sometimes too, because I do understand the whole, you know, you call this particular company just to ask them what's going on and you get intense back at you, but it's like, well, I have a reason to call. I've got to engage in this. It doesn't have to go bad. And I'm going to be reasonable, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that's where I guess I'd go back to finally that if you know what the meaning is behind what you're doing, and if it's rooted in your values, then you can be confident in the stance that you have, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're confident in the stance that you have, then you can make those informed choices around when and how you advocate, when and how you engage in potentially conflictual conversations, when and how you bring yourself to action in terms of how you want to affect change related to the climate.
One other question that comes up is, are there good resources? Are there things that we can look at that can really help us, that give us some solid but plain language or numbers or information to help us think through, you know, paper or plastic? Well, here's the plastic, why that's bad. Here's the reason the paper's not great. Or the concept of recycling. Well, do things actually get recycled? We hear stories occasionally that it all goes to the same place. How do we work with all of that? And yeah, and are there resources to help us guide through this so that we can feel like we're making a choice that actually really does go out and do good in the world?
Yeah. Yes, definitely. And I'm so glad you asked that. So now everybody's all solid in who they are and what they're about, and they're ready to go take action, right? Right. So this is what we do now, everybody. I strongly encourage people to get engaged. And there are many organizations, many credible organizations to engage with. And you can just go right online and look up the websites and you'll find resources, actions, campaigns, and initiatives that you can plug right into with explicit instructions about what you can do, from the littlest action to totally committing yourself to being the leader of a particular campaign. Of course, my favorite is the Climate Reality Project, and that website is theclimaterealityproject.org. And I would love to see people apply for the leadership training. And I think leadership training can also be extraordinarily helpful in getting you connected, getting you plugged in, and feel like you're informed and you have somewhat of a base to go with. We also have the Citizens Climate Lobby. 100% Minnesota for Minnesotans is a really excellent organization. I'm a part of both CCL and 100% Minnesota. And there's a great coalition that's formed in the state of Minnesota called the Alliance for Sustainability. And if you look them up, you would also find a huge list of organizations and what they're doing in the state. Climate Central is another good organization. And Climate Generation is fantastic, Will Steger Legacy. And that's youth-led. But they have, really, their website is so helpful. There's curriculum, there's information about understanding the climate change, there are different activities, toolkits. We also have that on the Climate Reality website as well. So I would start by looking at what's already happening. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, you are going to have to do a little bit of research. And I mean, you as in general, plural, that you got to do the research to find out what's happening out there. And it would take me too long to delineate all the different actions.
Sure. Right? That makes perfect sense. Yes.
Yeah. And people have different skills. So there are going to be some people are really good at organizing. And so they're going to want to look up tools for organizing a community gathering. And then they're going to be like, wow, I could have a house party and we could have a conversation about climate change and what we want to do. Or, hey, I could have a letter writing campaign in my coffee shop. And how do I get people to come? So there are different activities and resources and toolkits at these various websites. There are also fantastic presentations and videos that people can look at in terms of some people change their careers and want to go into environmental work. You know, if you're at that level and you want to do that, that's fantastic. And there are kind of how-tos in directing people who want to do that. So is that helpful?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I mean, and I will, when I put the notes together, I'll find some, grab some of our local stuff here in Duluth, but the podcast goes everywhere too. So I want to have those state and national things.
I'm pretty sure all of the, I don't know if Duluth yet has a climate reality chapter.
Okay.
But we do have two chapters that I know of right now in Minnesota. It's the Southern Minnesota Greater Metro Area chapter that I'm co-chairing. And then there's the St. Paul chapter.
Okay.
And we can serve as resources for people if they want to either start to develop a chapter like in Duluth. And in that regard, then you would have the support of the Climate Reality Project and a lot of resources at your disposal through the Climate Reality Project, which would be really great to have Duluth in the network. That's another way to get involved, is to check in with the city. All of the citizens of Duluth have a right, if not a responsibility, to access the city council. And I'd encourage every citizen to check in on the climate action plan for the city of Duluth and in every city in the world. You know, in Minnesota, Northfield just passed their climate action plan, which was a huge win. And part of the climate action plan here is 100% committed by 2030 to renewable energy, 100% renewable energy.
Nice.
Yeah. And so the 100% campaign is one of the bigger initiatives that we really feel has a lot of power behind it in terms of looking at the big picture.
Okay.
Relative to the policy change and carbon emissions. We know that's the problem that we're combating right now. We're also looking at how are we sequestering carbon, right? So we're taking it, reducing emissions, but then also getting the carbon back into the soil.
Okay.
And so that's another really great initiative we have going on in our state, regenerative agriculture. And so if there are people who are interested in gardening, we'll be doing our chapter will be doing a program this spring. We don't have a date set yet, but with master gardeners on carbon sequestration, carbon farming practices as applied to gardening and landscape.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So there are lots of different ways that people can plug in to different initiatives. It's really a matter of sleuthing a bit. And some of those organizations I mentioned already, they're in cities all over the state and all over the country. So I'd be surprised if you didn't have chapters of all of these in Duluth. I highly recommend people just having conversations, not feeling like I've already got to know all the answers, but I'm going to reach out to this person who's a chapter chair of the Duluth Climate Reality Project. And I just want to talk with them and see what's going on.
Right.
And that's a great starting place. Rather than I already have to have my climate action plan all figured out and tell them I'm already doing, you know, all these things to save the world. And now I want to join the organization.
Yeah. Well, and I think there is a little bit of that fear, feeling like they have to have it together.
Yeah.
You know, and be doing all the right things. And I know that that's not true with the way people respond necessarily and how they really feel, because they know that everybody's trying to do their best. But I think there is some of that fear of judgment that happens. So, and before you go, I definitely want to have people know how to find you, but I just wanted to mention something that you had mentioned, because this is a great way to encapsulate everything, is the three words you had used with what we can do is using our voices, choices, and votes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's right. And we all have all three of those, right? So we start with what we have, and those three things are the right now the most powerful tools that we have.
Right. So how do people find you? You work generally as a therapist in Northfield, mm-hmm. and I assume it's a in-person thing that you're doing with folks.
I do face-to-face. I also do remote. So I have some clients that I see via Zoom or Skype or FaceTime.
Okay, great.
I do also speaking engagements and educational workshops. I work very closely with the Northfield Grief Support Coalition and have been doing some climate grief work with them. And so that's another area that I work in, I can be found in, but I am quickly becoming more of a climate reality leader activist than a therapist. So right now it's getting pretty close to 50-50.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what that means, but it seems to be the organic direction that my life is taking, and they're not mutually exclusive, which I'm very, very happy about.
Right.
But if people wanted to look me up, my website is naomibertley.com, and my phone number is on that website. There's also a link to email me if people wanted to reach out and email me. And for the most part, that's probably the best way to reach me if you're interested in the Climate Reality Project and joining our chapter or starting a chapter or plugging into any kind of campaigns and initiatives. Right now, our primary campaign is 100% committed across the state of Minnesota. And we also are campaigning around coalition building. I can be reached through that website, and I welcome anybody who wants to either talk about climate or climate change action, eco-anxiety, any way that I can be helpful. And that folds in kind of nicely with promoting this Common Good panel discussion.
Yes. Yeah, so talk about this event. You're having an event that is happening February 27th.
Yes, I am a panelist on a lovely group of women, no less, on combating climate change for the Neuger Communications Group on February 27th at 8 a.m. at the Hilton Hotel in downtown Minneapolis, talking about not only what we can do about climate change and how that affects various business sectors, nonprofits, educational institutions, but one of the areas I'll be talking about is looking at the issue of equity and just transition to a green economy. And why I think that's important is I think that when we are so myopic about, here we are in the Western world, oh my gosh, climate change is coming, it's almost at our doorstep. I think often many of us can fail to see that people who don't have the experience of social equity are already dealing with this. You know, not only in other countries and nations in the world, but right here in our own country, we know that the frontline communities are people who are often experiencing poverty, often multicultural communities, and including the mentally ill, immigrants, refugees, and women. Mm-hmm. And so I'll be talking about that some at this Common Good breakfast, as well as addressing a little bit more about what we've already talked about today. And so I did want to just touch on that briefly here because I wanted to circle back around to qualifying about the Western world and how we're experiencing climate anxiety and how that compares and relates to how many other communities may be experiencing it.
It would be interesting to hear more people from other parts of the world who aren't as protected and their experience. I think when I hear people talking about their experiences as they have traveled and taken some trips, mission trips and various other things where they feel like they're seeing this happening, and then they come back and are talking to people who are just like, you know, it's not real. This is, you know, they're just like, oh my gosh, you know, perhaps it's the fear of facing the truth, but it's the whole, we have to get real with this or we're going to get a big shock.
Well, yeah, we are. And I think, you know, as we were talking about previously, we can't do it alone. Everybody, regardless of class, race, community, we all need to be in this together. And, you know, I might be able to say, oh, you know, maybe in 5 years I can buy an electric car. Well, that's a privilege of class at this point. You know, so when we look at environmental justice and we look at just transitions, you know, we're proposing taking people out of jobs in the fossil fuel industry. And so how are we going to transition them, help them transition into a just economic situation? You know, and so that requires some empathy and some insight beyond ourselves. So we'll be talking about that a little bit at the Common Good Breakfast. And that just continues to be a thread that's woven in our environmental activism. And I think part of our eco-anxiety, you know, where we feel like we're helpless to help people who are different than us. We're helpless to help people who live far away from us. And I think the more we know about one another and the more we communicate with one another, that can also mitigate for some of that sense of anxiety.
Right. Well, I can imagine that it could go both ways, right? It could bring it on more, but it also, you also understand it. So maybe it changes how the anxiety looks a little bit.
Yeah. And I think that's wise to point out it could go both ways. And so we get back to the self-care and the having, you know, kind of things plugged in place that hold you as someone who's invested in the care of the earth, so that you're able to be a good instrument and give what you have to give and not completely deplete yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
And how do they find out about that? Is that something they need to get tickets to?
Yes, they do need to get tickets. And do you think that I could just send you the link?
Yep.
I don't have it on.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Great.
So yeah, we'll just put the link in the show notes. So if somebody wants to attend that, is there a cutoff to when they can get the tickets to that or?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, no. Perfect. Thursday, February 27th at 8 a.m.
Yep.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. This has been really, it's been fun to talk to you, and I appreciate you accepting my reach out from, I didn't go to the Fig and Faro event, but I just thought, oh my gosh, this is such a great conversation that we need to have. And I hear it in the stress of people's discussions about trying to figure out how do we do this? How do we feel like we're doing enough? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And not blah, blah, blah in the dismissive sense, because it's very real when people start to kind of, you have that sense of impending doom that sometimes shows up. So I appreciate the work that you're doing in education and supporting people and having us, you know, figure this out so we can feel better about what we're doing and go more confidently ahead, and that's going to serve us better in the long run.
Yeah. And I guess I would underscore one thing I didn't speak to as much as I would have wanted to, is part of having the perspective is that we do have the solutions and we know we have the solutions. So it's not like we're trying to find a solution that doesn't exist. We just need to plug into and support the solutions that we know are out there. And that's where we come back around to using our voice choices and votes.
Right. And that in and of itself is really hopeful.
Like, yeah.
Absolutely. That there, we didn't used to have is the solutions we have now.
Right. That's right.
So it is really exciting to feel like we're in a much better place and that it is about making them happen rather than feeling completely hopeless.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. This has been wonderful. I appreciate it.
It has. You too.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There's just a couple other little things that I had in my notes that we didn't include in the conversation. One of the things that Naomi had said when we were talking was doing the little things, and hopefully I'm getting the flavor to this that she intends, but even doing the little things that we can do helps us feel like we're doing something, helps us with our self-efficacy. And so doing those things is important. And, you know, I would add, and probably she would too, those little things, they not only add up, but they also have us feeling like we're moving in a positive and helpful direction, which keeps us then on board with doing and continuing to do the little and the big things. She had also talked about if you're wanting to help, but you're frustrated because time is an issue or you're feeling like life stress, that perhaps it's worth mentioning it to other people that you desire to do this and what your intent is. And maybe there are ways you can help each other either get to events or do the things that you'd like to do. Maybe it's a childcare issue and somebody else can help with that, or transportation, or people can come together and help each other as a group. So letting people know that you're frustrated and that you're wanting to do these things so that if there's an opportunity to help and make it easy, that perhaps that can be problem solved for. I am working on getting the links to all of the resources that Naomi mentioned. And, you know, if you're listening to this and you have a project that you're working on or an event, be it in Duluth or anywhere else, feel free to put a comment on the website or put a comment on Facebook and share what you are doing and how to find out more about it. That would be fantastic. You know, I remember sitting in chemistry class in college talking about the effects of climate change as we were going forward and what it was expected to look like, and talking about the severity of storms and how things were going to change in that effect. And it's been interesting living here in Duluth by the Big Lake, because we have certainly had more intensive winds and storms and waves from my perspective. I'm not a lifer here in Duluth. I've only lived here for about, going on 13 years. Wow, I guess I have lived here 13 years now. So I've been here a while, but from other people that have lived here all their life, that they are feeling like the trend that they are seeing is definitely that things are shifting. So it's hard to deny that when you're experiencing it, and it certainly gets to feeling a little overwhelming with how are we going to handle this going forward. So it doesn't surprise me that people are ending up in therapy over it. After all, I've known people who have made very conscientious decisions not to have children for that exact reason. So it clearly changes a life path when thinking about what the possibilities are in the future. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great week. See you next week, and I hope you continue to find the pieces that fit into your health and wellness puzzle, be it your personal health and wellness puzzle or the big futuristic picture, the planet picture. It is all one big connected puzzle that we're all trying to put little pieces into. Hence the whole puzzle metaphor. It's hard to know if it's a puzzle or a soup or a 3D kind of model thing. I don't know. Anyway, there you go. And feel free to report back on the comments how much more aware you were of this week of turning your lights off, noticing the water being on, adding a little more to the trash can before you take the garbage out to use less plastic, all that fun stuff. Anyway, see you later.